This is the Cambridge Assessment International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, November 2019 examination in English as a Second Language. Paper 4, Listening. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you're all ready. Here is the exam. Exercise 1. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. What has the girl lost? B. Where does she think she lost it?
Hi, Dad. I've got a problem.
Have you lost your key again?
Don't worry. That's in my backpack. It's actually my application form. I thought it was inside my school folder, but it's not there.
When did you last have it?
Well, I filled it in my bedroom, and I know I showed it to Mum when we were sitting at the kitchen table. I'm pretty sure I picked it up again, but anyway, then I went into the garage to get my sports gear, so maybe it fell out in there? Could you check for me, please?
Sure. I'll call you back in 2 minutes.
Thanks, Dad. Hi, Dad. I've got a problem.
Have you lost your key again?
Don't worry. That's in my backpack. It's actually my application form. I thought it was inside my school folder, but it's not there.
When did you last have it?
Well, I filled it in my bedroom, and I know I showed it to Mum when we were sitting at the kitchen table. I'm pretty sure I picked it up again, but anyway, then I went into the garage to get my sports gear, so maybe it fell out in there? Could you check for me, please?
Sure. I'll call you back in 2 minutes.
Thanks, Dad.
Question 2. A. Which event will the friends go to at the Arts Centre? B. Where are the friends going to meet?
Hi, Dan. I'm just calling about this evening. I had a look at the programme for the Arts Centre to check what's on. I know you wanted to see that rock band. They've sold out already, but the comedy club is also on. I hope you don't mind, but I've got tickets for us. It'll be really good. Anyway, I'll see you after college at the station at 5:30. Oh, and my cousin's coming too. You'll like him. He's working at the Studio Cafe until 6, so I said we'd pick him up on our way there. See you later. Hi, Dan. I'm just calling about this evening. I had a look at the programme for the Arts Centre to check what's on. I know you wanted to see that rock band. They've sold out already, but the comedy club is also on. I hope you don't mind, but I've got tickets for us. It'll be really good. Anyway, I'll see you after college at the station at 5:30. Oh, and my cousin's coming too. You'll like him. He's working at the Studio Cafe until 6, so I said we'd pick him up on our way there. See you later.
Question 3. A. What is the man reading an article about? B. Which part of the newspaper does the woman want to look at first?
Have you nearly finished with the newspaper?
Almost. There's a really good article on the second page about global warming. You should definitely read it. I'm halfway through another one on international trade. Can you just give me another 5 minutes to finish it?
Actually, I don't fancy reading anything too long right now. I just wanted to check the job adverts before I look at the TV listings to see what's on later.
Oh, okay. I'll be quick.
Thanks. Have you nearly finished with the newspaper?
Almost. There's a really good article on the second page about global warming. You should definitely read it. I'm halfway through another one on international trade. Can you just give me another 5 minutes to finish it?
Actually, I don't fancy reading anything too long right now. I just wanted to check the job adverts before I look at the TV listings to see what's on later.
Oh, okay. I'll be quick.
Thanks.
Question 4. A. Where does the bicycle tour finish? B. What is provided for free with bicycle hire?
Thanks for calling City Tours. Please listen for more information about Saturday's guided bicycle tour. This leaves from Castle Street at 9:30 a.m., goes around town, then heads onwards to the Nature Park, which is where the tour comes to an end. There's also a stop at the river for a break on the way. Afterwards, you can either take your bicycle back to town on the train or cycle back independently. If you'd like to rent a bicycle, please book in advance. See our website for prices. A lock is included, but you have to pay extra for lights and a helmet. Thank you for listening. Thanks for calling City Tours. Please listen for more information about Saturday's guided bicycle tour. This leaves from Castle Street at 9:30 a.m., goes around town, then heads onwards to the Nature Park, which is where the tour comes to an end. There's also a stop at the river for a break on the way. Afterwards, you can either take your bicycle back to town on the train or cycle back independently. If you'd like to rent a bicycle, please book in advance. See our website for prices. A lock is included, but you have to pay extra for lights and a helmet. Thank you for listening.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 2. You will hear a teacher giving a talk about a college fair. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to start by giving you all a quick update on arrangements for this year's college fair. It's only 6 weeks away now. As you know, the fair is a great opportunity for us to raise money for the college. We asked you all for suggestions as to how the money could be spent and received many interesting ideas. One popular idea was using the money for a pool table, though even more of you suggested getting a climbing wall, and I don't see why we shouldn't do that. Each year we have a theme for the fair. The team organising the fair came up with several ideas, which you all had the chance to vote for, and I'm going to reveal the results now. There were 2 clear preferences, one of which was the circus, and the other was the beach, although that was a few votes behind. The team organising the fair are still finalising the programme, which includes some new activities, as well as many of the usual ones. We haven't had the opportunity to try street dance before, but hopefully many of you will enjoy this as much as horse riding, which was a new activity last year and proved extremely popular. We've also decided on the competition, which, as usual, is related to an animal from a local farm. This year, we're borrowing a sheep for the day. We had some great suggestions, which included getting people to draw it, though in the end, we're going to give people a bit of a challenge. They have to guess how heavy it is. And whoever gets it right, or is the nearest to it, will be presented with a digital camera. The runner-up will receive a couple of cinema tickets. As usual, there'll be a variety of stalls. We have space for 20 stalls, and so far have confirmed 16 of them, including 1 for each year group. I've already heard from years 7 and 10, who will be selling handmade cakes and biscuits, and there'll be a jewellery stall, as in previous years, run by year 9. We'd like to hear from the other classes by the end of next week, please. As you can tell, the organising team have been working hard to get everything ready. Some of you have volunteered to help with things like printing tickets and setting up on the day. If anyone else could assist with making posters, the team would be very grateful. Just let me know or speak to anyone in the team. Alternatively, you could come along to the next planning meeting when we will be finalising all the details. Please note that if you look on the school calendar, the date and time for the meeting is correct, but the venue is not. So if you have already written down the computer room in your diaries, please change that to the library. And that's next Monday lunchtime for half an hour. Please come along if you'd like to help the team. Now, are there any questions before I move on to some quick announcements?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to start by giving you all a quick update on arrangements for this year's college fair. It's only 6 weeks away now. As you know, the fair is a great opportunity for us to raise money for the college. We asked you all for suggestions as to how the money could be spent and received many interesting ideas. One popular idea was using the money for a pool table, though even more of you suggested getting a climbing wall. And I don't see why we shouldn't do that. Each year we have a theme for the fair. The team organising the fair came up with several ideas, which you all had the chance to vote for, and I'm going to reveal the results now. There were two clear preferences, one of which was the circus, and the other was the beach, although that was a few votes behind. The team organising the fair are still finalising the programme, which includes some new activities, as well as many of the usual ones. We haven't had the opportunity to try street dance before, but hopefully many of you will enjoy this as much as horse riding, which was a new activity last year and proved extremely popular. We've also decided on the competition, which, as usual, is related to an animal from a local farm. This year, we're borrowing a sheep for the day. We had some great suggestions, which included getting people to draw it, though in the end, we're going to give people a bit of a challenge. They have to guess how heavy it is. And whoever gets it right, or is the nearest to it, will be presented with a digital camera. The runner-up will receive a couple of cinema tickets. As usual, there'll be a variety of stalls. We have space for 20 stalls, and so far have confirmed 16 of them, including one for each year group. I've already heard from years 7 and 10, who will be selling handmade cakes and biscuits, and there'll be a jewellery stall, as in previous years, run by year 9. We'd like to hear from the other classes by the end of next week, please. As you can tell, the organising team have been working hard to get everything ready. Some of you have volunteered to help with things like printing tickets and setting up on the day. If anyone else could assist with making posters, the team would be very grateful. Just let me know or speak to anyone in the team. Alternatively, you could come along to the next planning meeting when we will be finalising all the details. Please note that if you look on the school calendar, the date and time for the meeting is correct, but the venue is not. So if you have already written down the computer room in your diaries, please change that to the library. And that's next Monday lunchtime for half an hour. Please come along if you'd like to help the team. Now, are there any questions before I move on to some quick announcements?
That is the end of the talk. In a moment you will hear exercise 3. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 3. You will hear six people talking about going to university. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
If you want to go to university, there are so many decisions to make, like what to study and where to go. I'm lucky because I've known for years that I wanted to study medicine and become a doctor. I got a place at the university in my town, and in the first year I lived at home. It was a good way to save money, but I found it harder to meet people. After that, I had a room in a university residence and wouldn't hesitate to recommend that to other people.
Speaker 2.
I went straight to university after leaving school, and to be honest, I think I would have benefited from a break instead. Quite a few of my friends did that. Some went off to other countries, traveling or doing voluntary work. Others got jobs here and saved up some money to help pay for their courses. It all sounded really exciting, plus they had a chance to grow up a bit and experience real life. I think I was a bit too young when I started university.
Speaker 3.
When I went to university, only about 20% of the students at my school did the same. Nowadays, it's probably more than double that. Some people say that's a good thing, as going to university opens up all sorts of opportunities for young people. But the reality in many countries is that most graduates end up with a huge amount of debt and spend years trying to pay it off. That's why it's so important to study a subject that will lead to employment and a decent salary.
Speaker 4.
It's all very well saying that students shouldn't have to pay for their degree courses, but if they're free, where does all the money come from to run a university department? In my opinion, if students don't have to pay, they're more likely to drop out, especially the students who don't realise what's expected of them academically and struggle to get used to it. It's surprising how few students are aware that they need to be much more independent in the way they study for a degree.
Speaker 5.
When I started my course, I wasn't particularly interested in the idea of spending one of the years in a foreign university, but I changed my mind and went away for my third year. The way they taught classes there was completely different, though I didn't take long to get used to that. I rented a room in an amazing house there with some great people. We're all still friends. In fact, the whole experience opened my mind and helped me decide what sort of job I wanted to aim for in the future.
Speaker 6.
I'm really glad I went to university. I learned so much about my subjects, but also gained lots of other skills, how to think logically, present arguments, do research, and so on. These are the sorts of skills that more school leavers would really benefit from. I think it's a shame that so many 18-year-olds decide to go straight into employment because they're worried about the cost of a course. I had a year off after I graduated and travelled around Africa, but got my dream job soon after coming back.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
If you want to go to university, there are so many decisions to make, like what to study and where to go. I'm lucky because I've known for years that I wanted to study medicine and become a doctor. I got a place at the university in my town, and in the first year I lived at home. It was a good way to save money, but I found it harder to meet people. After that, I had a room in a university residence and wouldn't hesitate to recommend that to other people.
Speaker 2.
I went straight to university after leaving school, and to be honest, I think I would have benefited from a break instead. Quite a few of my friends did that. Some went off to other countries, traveling or doing voluntary work. Others got jobs here and saved up some money to help pay for their courses. It all sounded really exciting, plus they had a chance to grow up a bit and experience real life. I think I was a bit too young when I started university.
Speaker 3.
When I went to university, only about 20% of the students at my school did the same. Nowadays, it's probably more than double that. Some people say that's a good thing, as going to university opens up all sorts of opportunities for young people. But the reality in many countries is that most graduates end up with a huge amount of debt and spend years trying to pay it off. That's why it's so important to study a subject that will lead to employment and a decent salary.
Speaker 4.
It's all very well saying that students shouldn't have to pay for their degree courses, but if they're free, where does all the money come from to run a university department? In my opinion, if students don't have to pay, they're more likely to drop out, especially the students who don't realise what's expected of them academically and struggle to get used to it. It's surprising how few students are aware that they need to be much more independent in the way they study for a degree.
Speaker 5.
When I started my course, I wasn't particularly interested in the idea of spending one of the years in a foreign university, but I changed my mind and went away for my third year. The way they taught classes there was completely different, though I didn't take long to get used to that. I rented a room in an amazing house there with some great people. We're all still friends. In fact, the whole experience opened my mind and helped me decide what sort of job I wanted to aim for in the future.
Speaker 6.
I'm really glad I went to university. I learned so much about my subjects, but also gained lots of other skills, how to think logically, present arguments, do research, and so on. These are the sorts of skills that more school leavers would really benefit from. I think it's a shame that so many 18-year-olds decide to go straight into employment because they're worried about the cost of a course. I had a year off after I graduated and travelled around Africa, but got my dream job soon after coming back.
That is the end of exercise 3. In a moment, you will hear exercise 4. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 4. You will hear a radio interview with a woman called Britt Collins, who is talking about plastic waste. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Welcome to World Matters. Today's programme is all about plastic. With me is Britt Collins, who's been finding out about the plastic we throw away. Tell us about it, Britt.
Well, in a newspaper recently, I saw a photo of a beach on a remote Pacific island. It was completely covered in plastic. It was a shocking image. so it didn't surprise me when I read that the majority of waste found on shores around the world is made of plastic. What I didn't expect to discover was that by 2050, there'll be fewer fish in the sea than plastic objects.
Why do you think people don't recycle more plastic?
Well, in some areas, plastic recycling has increased enormously. My parents, who live in another town, have 5 recycling bins and can put all sorts in them, from old toothbrushes to yogurt pot lids. It's not fair that I can't do that too. All I can recycle is plastic bottles. But some people don't even realise what you can or can't recycle. They just throw everything away.
Tell us about the plastic challenge your family took part in.
It's a 2-week challenge about changing your habits to do with plastic to discourage you from buying anything that's sold in plastic that you can't reuse or recycle. In the first half of the challenge, we had to keep all the plastic we'd normally throw away or recycle to give us an idea of the quantity we'd get through.
And the following week?
We had to avoid plastic use as much as possible. I was given lots of suggestions. Some I was already doing, like planting herbs from seed instead of buying plants in plastic pots. Others were much simpler, like covering leftover food in the fridge with a dinner plate rather than wrapping it in plastic. I began doing that straight away. And it recommended cooking more food rather than buying things ready-made, though I tend to do that anyway.
So it wasn't that hard to reduce your plastic use?
Mostly not. We had to avoid buying anything that comes in plastic bottles. We tried using bars of soap rather than liquid hand wash. I've got 2 young children, though. They kept dropping the soap, then they'd slip on the floor. I couldn't bear the mess. I discovered that I could buy a 5-litre refill of washing up liquid rather than getting new bottles each time, so that wasn't so bad. And I simply gave up using makeup remover, which surprisingly wasn't as tricky as I thought it'd be.
Do you think you could completely avoid using plastic?
In theory, yes. To begin with, it seemed it'd be much more expensive because I was buying larger quantities of everything. But that worked out in my favour after a while. I just think it'd take over my life. I'd be permanently planning and going to different shops to get things without plastic packaging. Luckily, I can do that on foot where I live. Otherwise, I'd have to drive everywhere, and that'd hardly be a green solution.
So, would you say that doing the challenge was a success?
Definitely. We've reduced our plastic use by about 25%. I'm trying to encourage other people to do this too. So I went into both of my children's classes to tell them about our experience. Then the school arranged an environment day, which I handed out leaflets for. They raised quite a bit of money for some environmental projects in the area, which was great.
You're also concerned about releasing balloons into the sky, which is really popular at parties, isn't it?
That's right. But it causes a huge environmental problem. So for my daughter's birthday recently, we had great fun making models of animals out of long, thin balloons instead. Some of her friends still wanted to release just a few balloons, but we explained why that wouldn't be good. Another time we might make flags instead. They look great, and you can use them again and again.
That's a useful tip, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Welcome to World Matters. Today's programme is all about plastic. With me is Brit Collins, who's been finding out about the plastic we throw away. Tell us about it, Brit.
Well, in a newspaper recently, I saw a photo of a beach on a remote Pacific island. It was completely covered in plastic. It was a shocking image. So it didn't surprise me when I read that the majority of waste found on shores around the world is made of plastic. What I didn't expect to discover was that by 2050, there'll be fewer fish in the sea than plastic objects.
Why do you think people don't recycle more plastic?
Well, in some areas, plastic recycling has increased enormously. My parents, who live in another town, have 5 recycling bins and can put all sorts in them, from old toothbrushes to yogurt pot lids. It's not fair that I can't do that too. All I can recycle is plastic bottles. But some people don't even realise what you can or can't recycle. They just throw everything away.
Tell us about the plastic challenge your family took part in.
It's a two-week challenge about changing your habits to do with plastic, to discourage you from buying anything that's sold in plastic that you can't reuse or recycle. In the first half of the challenge, we had to keep all the plastic we'd normally throw away or recycle to give us an idea of the quantity we'd get through.
And the following week?
We had to avoid plastic use as much as possible. I was given lots of suggestions. Some I was already doing, like planting herbs from seed instead of buying plants in plastic pots. Others were much simpler, like covering leftover food in the fridge with a dinner plate rather than wrapping it in plastic. I began doing that straight away. And it recommended cooking more food rather than buying things ready-made, though I tend to do that anyway.
So it wasn't that hard to reduce your plastic use?
Mostly not. We had to avoid buying anything that comes in plastic bottles. We tried using bars of soap rather than liquid hand wash. I've got two young children, though. They kept dropping the soap, then they'd slip on the floor. I couldn't bear the mess. I discovered that I could buy a 5-litre refill of washing up liquid rather than getting new bottles each time, so that wasn't so bad. And I simply gave up using makeup remover, which surprisingly wasn't as tricky as I thought it'd be.
Do you think you could completely avoid using plastic?
In theory, yes. To begin with, it seemed it'd be much more expensive because I was buying larger quantities of everything. But that worked out in my favour after a while. I just think it'd take over my life. I'd be permanently planning and going to different shops to get things without plastic packaging. Luckily, I can do that on foot where I live. Otherwise, I'd have to drive everywhere, and that'd hardly be a green solution.
So, would you say that doing the challenge was a success?
Definitely. We've reduced our plastic use by about 25%. I'm trying to encourage other people to do this too. So I went into both of my children's classes to tell them about our experience. Then the school arranged an environment day, which I handed out leaflets for. They raised quite a bit of money for some environmental projects in the area, which was great.
You're also concerned about releasing balloons into the sky, which is really popular at parties, isn't it?
That's right. But it causes a huge environmental problem. So for my daughter's birthday recently, we had great fun making models of animals out of long, thin balloons instead. Some of her friends still wanted to release just a few balloons, but we explained why that wouldn't be good. Another time we might make flags instead. They look great, and you can use them again and again.
That's a useful tip, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
That is the end of the interview. In a moment, you will hear exercise 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 5, Part A. You will hear a tree specialist giving a talk about a type of tree called the rowan tree. Listen to the talk and complete the notes in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Today I'm going to tell you about some of my favourite species of trees, beginning with the rowan tree. This tree is native to northern and western Europe, but it also grows in North Africa and parts of Asia, particularly in China and near the Himalayas. Where the traditional name rowan comes from isn't clear, but the word has origins in several different languages, including German, Swedish, and Old English. These trees are actually a member of the rose family, and some people refer to them as mountain ash trees, which is hardly surprising, as they grow very well on hillsides and in exposed places where many other trees are not found. they can actually survive for as long as 200 years. Another feature of these trees is the speed at which they grow. You might think that this would make them ideal to be grown for construction purposes, but the fact that they generally only reach 15 meters in height is what prevents them from being the first choice for most commercial timber forests. However, the wood from these trees is dense, which makes it very strong. Therefore, it is often carved, by hand or by machine, into things like walking sticks, as well as handles for household or garden equipment. These trees are often recognized by their brightly colored berries, usually red or orange, but some species of the rowan tree can have pink, yellow, or even white berries. The majority of these are poisonous to humans if they are eaten raw, but the berries from some varieties can be collected and used in cooking. They tend to be very bitter, although if the berries are gathered after a frost, this is much less noticeable. The berries are, in fact, a great source of food for birds through the winter months. In some places, people believe that when the berries are particularly plentiful in autumn, it indicates that there will be heavy snow that winter. Others take this as a sign that there will be a successful harvest the following year. None of this is scientifically proven, of course, but there are many such popular beliefs which can differ quite significantly by region. So, before I move on to the second tree that I want to focus on today, are there any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Today, I'm going to tell you about some of my favorite species of trees, beginning with the rowan tree. This tree is native to northern and western Europe, but it also grows in North Africa and parts of Asia, particularly in China and near the Himalayas. Where the traditional name rowan comes from isn't clear, but the word has origins in several different languages, including German, Swedish, and Old English. These trees are actually a member of the rose family, and some people refer to them as mountain ash trees, which is hardly surprising as they grow very well on hillsides and in exposed places where many other trees are not found. They can actually survive for as long as 200 years. Another feature of these trees is the speed at which they grow. You might think that this would make them ideal to be grown for construction purposes, but the fact that they generally only reach 15 meters in height is what prevents them from being the first choice for most commercial timber forests. However, the wood from these trees is dense, which makes it very strong. Therefore, it is often carved, by hand or by machine, into things like walking sticks, as well as handles for household or garden equipment. These trees are often recognized by their brightly colored berries, usually red or orange, but some species of the rowan tree can have pink, yellow, or even white berries. The majority of these are poisonous to humans if they are eaten raw, but the berries from some varieties can be collected and used in cooking. They tend to be very bitter, although if the berries are gathered after a frost, this is much less noticeable. The berries are, in fact, a great source of food for birds through the winter months. In some places, people believe that when the berries are particularly plentiful in autumn, it indicates that there will be heavy snow that winter. Others take this as a sign that there will be a successful harvest the following year. None of this is scientifically proven, of course, but there are many such popular beliefs which can differ quite significantly by region. So, before I move on to the second tree that I want to focus on today, are there any questions?
Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about trees in cities and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one word only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Hi, Jenny. Is now a good time to talk about our project?
Sure. I've just been reading about how important trees are to our cities, for so many reasons. Apparently, places where there are fewer trees have higher rates of crime than greener places. I guess because they have a calming influence. And of course, trees produce oxygen and have a cooling effect too.
Interesting. And I found out about one organisation which mapped the location of the trees in 10 cities around the world. Their aim was to rate cities by how green the streets are.
You mean by the number of trees?
Yes, that's right. So they looked at a number of cities of different sizes, and they found that Paris in France actually had a really low density of trees, even though its population density is the highest. And Vancouver in Canada had the greatest number of trees.
I wonder what our city's like.
So why don't we do a survey of our local area?
That's a great idea. Let's write down a plan.
OK. Well, to start with, we'll have to select an area that we can cover between us. It can't be very large.
Then we should make a note of all the trees in that area. We can note down the frequency of each species.
We could, though their location might be more informative, as it'd show, for example, where tree planting should take place. That's often what these tree surveys are used for.
Of course, that makes sense. And we can highlight that in our report, can't we?
Yes. If we mark all the trees on a map, we could submit that too.
Though it might be better to produce a graph instead, because we could indicate which streets have the highest and lowest numbers of trees. I could do that.
Great. The only thing that worries me is being able to identify all the different trees we see.
Oh, I downloaded a really useful guide to help with that. So the tree might have single broad leaves, which can almost look like petals on a large flower, or several narrow pointed leaves on the same stem that resemble needles. Then you go on to look at other features, such as how far apart the leaves are or how big they are.
Why don't you print out a copy of the guide for each of us?
OK. Shall we meet here again at the same time tomorrow?
Sure. See you then.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Hi, Jenny. Is now a good time to talk about our project?
Sure. I've just been reading about how important trees are to our cities, for so many reasons. Apparently, places where there are fewer trees have higher rates of crime than greener places. I guess because they have a calming influence. And of course, trees produce oxygen and have a cooling effect too.
Interesting. And I found out about one organisation which mapped the location of the trees in 10 cities around the world. Their aim was to rate cities by how green the streets are.
You mean by the number of trees?
Yes, that's right. So they looked at a number of cities of different sizes, and they found that Paris in France actually had a really low density of trees, even though its population density is the highest. And Vancouver in Canada had the greatest number of trees.
I wonder what our city's like.
So why don't we do a survey of our local area?
That's a great idea. Let's write down a plan.
OK. Well, to start with, we'll have to select an area that we can cover between us. It can't be very large.
Then we should make a note of all the trees in that area. We can note down the frequency of each species.
We could, though their location might be more informative, as it'd show, for example, where tree planting should take place. That's often what these tree surveys are used for.
Of course, that makes sense. And we can highlight that in our report, can't we?
Yes. If we mark all the trees on a map, we could submit that too.
Though it might be better to produce a graph instead, because we could indicate which streets have the highest and lowest numbers of trees. I could do that.
Great. The only thing that worries me is being able to identify all the different trees we see.
Oh, I downloaded a really useful guide to help with that. So the tree might have single broad leaves, which can almost look like petals on a large flower, or several narrow pointed leaves on the same stem that resemble needles. Then you go on to look at other features, such as how far apart the leaves are or how big they are.
Why don't you print out a copy of the guide for each of us?
OK. Shall we meet here again at the same time tomorrow?
Sure. See you then.
That is the end of exercise 5 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.